Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across Northern British Columbia. Our podcast is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program that the Specialist Services Committee, which is a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation from local health authorities. We are casting to you today from the traditional territory of the Kleadle-Tené First Nation.
You're listening to QualityCast North. I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Deanna Danskin.
An all too common complaint we hear about healthcare today is related to the problem of fragmentation. Due to the increased complexity of medicine and the development of specialist roles, different components of a patient's pathway through the healthcare system often requires multiple different providers. How these different providers communicate with one another and work together is the key for seamless, safe, and high-quality patient care. Any breakdown in this communication can lead to patients falling through the cracks and potential adverse safety events. And this is particularly important in obstetrical and maternity care. Here to talk about her quality improvement work in addressing fragmentation by developing a wraparound maternity clinic is today's guest, Dawson Creek GP and obstetrician, Dr. Magda Duplessis. Hello, Magda. So glad you could join us today. So Magda, thank you for coming on the show today to talk about your quality improvement work. But before we get on to that work, it's become a bit of a tradition for us now on this podcast to hear something about our guests' early influences and what guided them on their way to a career in medicine. And so to kick us off, I wonder if we can ask you two questions. What things do you remember most vividly from when you were growing up? And what did your parents do, and how did that shape your life and ultimately your path into medicine?
Hi, Sharon. Thank you for having me on your podcast today. I think the most defining moment in my life on medicine was when I was 16. I saw a documentary about intrauterine surgery being done in Toronto. And there's a classic photo where the baby's hand comes out of the uterus and grabs onto the surgeon's hand. That was part of that documentary that I've seen. And I watched that and I got up and I told my mom, I'm going to be a doctor. This is what I want to do one day. And then worked the rest of my school career to get into med school. I grew up in South Africa. And in South Africa, we go into med school directly from grade 12. So your first year is in medicine. We don't have to do a degree in something else. So everything you do in your last 3 years in high school counts towards that. Both my parents were in professional careers. My mom is a teacher and my dad was in banking. So from a young age was learned to work hard and that teamwork is how we get things done and always been focused on that.
Oh, that's great. And so tell us a little bit about your practice in Dawson Creek and the team of people you work with.
So I myself is a GP, but we, as you know, in small rural towns, usually do everything. We were a group of about 10 physicians that did delivery care in Dawson Creek, all seeing our own patients in our own practices. And then as fortunately as landscape shifts, we lost a lot of those physicians and it became very clear that we needed to make some changes to provide alternative maternity care in our community. So that's how our maternity care project, the clinic's called Chickadee Maternity Collaborative, was born. And we are a team currently of four physicians and a midwife, as well as three RNs, PCAs, which is all funded by Northern Health for us in the clinic, that works together in collaboration, providing maternity care to the South Beast, which includes Dawson Creek, Tumbler Ridge and Chetwynd. But we do also, with the help of our gynae that started in February in Dawson Creek, provide care for higher risk patients as far as Fort Nelson, as we do all the diabetic care in pregnancy, which is not done in Fort St. John.
So I'm going to ask some specifics now about the project work you did to support the growth of the Chickadee Clinic. So why did you choose maternal care as the subject for your project?
So as mentioned in the South Beast, we had a problem with providing maternity care or the sustaining our services. So as the South Beach self-organizing group, we're not part of any divisions yet. We received funding through the Collaborative Services Committee to look at prenatal services in our town. And we used this funding to apply for the various things to develop our model. We first had a meeting with Northern Health and all the physicians and care providers in our town, which led to us coming up with our idea of having a collaborative clinic. We then processed through to doing a survey in our community to see what our community needs was. And out of the survey, the rest of the project was formed. And that's leading to the QI work that I did for Chickadee Maternity Clinic. So it was a coordinated wraparound care that is standard in Northern Health. And everybody in our town, from the Northern Health Authority to the patients, were all collaborating in bringing the idea of the clinic off the ground.
That sounds very multidisciplinary. And so what did your project involve? And ultimately, what were you aiming to improve?
So specifically for this part of the QI project that I did through VALS, our aim statement was 100% of eligible pregnant people in the South Peace will be registered and receive care in the Chickadee Maternity Collaborative by February of 2022.
And when you were working on your project, what were some of the challenges you encountered when you were trying to implement this new wraparound service?
So as you can imagine, the biggest challenge is for patients to understand that there is going to be a change in their care. Going from a model where they were used to seeing one provider throughout their pregnancy and delivering with that provider to now receiving care in a collaborative space, meeting more than one provider and not having a guarantee of who that provider is going to be. And then working on patients to understand that the care that they'll be receiving, although by different people, will be more comprehensive. And the hardest part was convincing people that they needed to join into the clinic and receive their care there, which is why we made it our aim statement. Initially, the patients in the first 3 months struggled a lot, especially patients that's used to receiving care from a female-only physician and now had to receive care from females and male physicians. But as we progressed through the year, that fell away, and we've never, ever had somebody ask again after the first 3 months to deliver with a specific provider. And we didn't have to do much work. The clinic sold itself to patients. They heard about the good work that we're doing and the freedom of being in a collaborative space. Just to backtrack, we do provide care according to the midwifery model. So patients has longer appointment times. We provide them choice of care in things like deciding on whether the baby needs to get vitamin K or the eye ointment post-delivery. And that's made a big change for patients to accepting the model of care that we're providing and got us to fulfill our aim statement of attaching 100% of the South Peace to our collaborative clinic.
Well, that's great. And it sounds very patient-centric, which is fantastic. So as you were implementing the project, were there any breakthrough moments? And if so, what were they?
So in the beginning of the project, I didn't know much about quality improvement work. You always hear about things. And then I did the VALS course and learned that there was actually words for the things that we do naturally sometimes. So it was very interesting. At our very, very first meeting, before we even opened the clinic, my QI coach came down to Dawson Creek and had some suggestions of what we can do. And we did a spaghetti diagram as part of our first challenge, and it was like an aha moment for everybody. Everybody got a string, and we did the live spaghetti diagram and then put it onto paper, and everybody got a different color string and had a different role to fulfill in the clinic. One was the nurse, one was the doctor, one was the patient, etc. And we walked and did our footprint within the space and how we planned this is all going to work. And then it turned out to be a very chaotic picture with all lines crossing and people not knowing where they're going. And then we had to sit down and reassess how we want the footprint in our clinic to work, the physical footprint. How does somebody come in and move through our space? And being in the framework of the midwifery care practice, we decided that we will pivot around the patient and not the patient around us, and subsequently then reduce that spaghetti diagram to a two color instead of five different colors crossing all over. And so that moment changed the way that we will practice. And we learned from each other in that time that as providers, we all have a set of ideas about how we think things should function, but that when we come together and we collaborate, sometimes your own ideas needs to move out of the room and you need to make space for the collaborative approach to actually work and improve the experience for the patients, which is what it was aimed at.
And while you were working on the project, what was the most surprising thing that you discovered?
I think that just again, that with different backgrounds, people have different ideas, and even different ideas in what collaboration is. And the one thing that we all had in common was passion for maternity, passion for our patients, and passion for providing the best possible care that we could. And just realizing that we can work together despite preconceived notions, and sitting down, and we're still doing every month, we have a follow-up meeting and we go back to our jam board that we created originally, and we still work on every single item that has not been resolved. So the most surprising thing for me was in new ideas, we could generate new passion for different work in people, which is quality improvement work.
Yeah, it sounds like a great, great discovery, very quality improvement focused. And I think you've sort of already mentioned this, but were you ultimately successful with the project?
We are happy to say we were successful in a few things. Our aim statement originally was just the attachments of patients, but we had some secondary aims that we wanted to achieve as well. And one of those aims was to monitor how many PSLSs comes from out of this new model of care. So not just that we managed to attach all the patients in the South Piece to the Chicoteague Maternity Collaborative, but we also had zero PSLSs in the first year of initiation. A third secondary outcome for us was to reduce our C-section rate. And I can say that we went down from a 33% C-section rate to 25% in our first year. And we are trying to get that down as well. It's very hard because now that we have a gynae that does high-risk maternity care, obviously the numbers are a little bit skewed by the amount of high-risk patients that requires care. But we were able to achieve the big three things we wanted to in our first year. And we are just going to hopefully improve on that. We've just received another grant with which we are going to do a one-year post-startup survey with patients again and look at what the patients want and how they feel the first year went. Although for our quality improvement project, we think it went well, but the most important voice is that of the patients and seeing if they agree with what we did.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. It'll be interesting to see what you get a year from now, although it sounds like you're well on your way to continually improving the services. So around the success of your project, what key factors do you think contributed to the success?
Two things that stood out was teamwork, just sitting down and allowing everybody the space to talk and to bring their ideas to the table. And then for us, valuable part, which is still ongoing, was our practice support coach, just sitting down, helping us develop the program and bringing in the tools that we needed, like the Jamboard that I just mentioned, that we're continuously working on and going back and improving on through our facilitation cycles. I think that was two key things for us.
Great.
Well, thank you for sharing that. It sounds like it was a very well constructed and ultimately very successful project. So that's wonderful to hear. I wonder if I can turn the interview slightly on a tangent and just ask you a couple of questions about quality improvement in general. Now you've been through the VALS training and have a successful project under your belt. But can I ask you, what do you think are the most common obstacles to physicians who want to improve the quality of the care they provide but find themselves unable to?
I think, honestly, time. is a big factor. Time to learn all the tools that you need to be able to get through a quality improvement project. As I mentioned, I didn't know half of these things existed until I did the VALS project. And the VALS project also takes a lot of time, a lot of learning time for physicians. And then not just the time to learn all the tools, but the to find the time to continue doing that on a consistent basis in practice. And then in my specific case, I think teamwork is also an obstacle. If people are not used to working in teams and is new into a collaborative space, that does provide an obstacle for collaboration and care in future. So just, I think if more physicians gets taught about quality improvement and how to do it earlier on in their careers, it will make a big difference.
That's a good point. And that's you're right. And that's not something that's automatically included in medical school curricula across the board. And so there's certainly a need for quality improvement education to young physicians. And how did the Physician Quality Improvement, PQI, initiative support you in this work specifically?
So for me, it was the immense amount of education and tools and, most important, patients that was brought to the table. And just working with me every step of the way, when I had questions, doesn't matter what time of the night it was, my PQI coach was willing to answer and help me through it. And just showing us that there is importance in the outcome of doing these things and what you can achieve. And again, that I didn't even know that a facilitation cycle is something that I'm doing when I'm improving on just my day-to-day work. So just learning all those tools from her, and it was extremely important for me at the end of the day.
Great. Well, thank you. And so finally, just on a broader topic of quality improvement, how do you think we could change the culture of medicine and encourage physicians to focus more on improving quality?
For me, I think it's from leading from within your own group, by showing them that by doing these kinds of projects and participating in things like VALS, that there is value to be added, not to the peer medicine that we practice, but to the patient care that we provide. And that no matter how old we are, we can be open to new concepts and new concepts of improving our daily work and improving care for our patients by participating in something like the VALS project.
That's great. Well, thank you for that. That was a great insight.
So obviously, as a physician working anywhere, but especially in a remote rural community, such as where you practice, there's clearly a real risk of physician burnout. There's so much pressure, there's so much stress, so much limitation in the resources you have. So do you have any personal strategies for preventing burnout? And how do you like to spend your spare time?
I think preventing burnout is is something that we all have to take time on and learn how to do. And in my own case, it's learning to delegate. I'm want to be in charge of everything and having a hard time delegating. And over the last 2 years, I've learned that any project can be done as well by anybody as yourself, and to let go. That's prevent for me, burnout specifically. And I am a big family person. I have 2 young kids, ages, 7 and 9 now. And my husband is very outdoors. So we as a family in the north is happy to be doing a lot of things that supports outdoor in summer. We're big campers. We have a boat. Everybody loves fishing. And in the winter, we are big on our local ski hill here in town. My kids are doing snow stars now, and we do go out to Tumbler Ridge, as everybody knows, which is great for ski doing. So that's the things we do to keep sane around here.
Yeah, lots of fun things to do up in the northeast of BC. So on that note, is there any other specifics you'd like to share about what you really enjoy about living and working as a physician in northern BC?
I think the big thing is I'm by heart a rural physician, and if you've worked rural once, you cannot do it, not ever again. I tried going back to urban and absolutely disliked the fact that I had to spend time in a car to get somewhere more than 5 minutes. So rural is in my heart and it's my passion. And I feel by providing care in a rural community, I can be I can do everything and provide care in every aspect, literally from cradle to grave in my practice. And then secondary, I feel there's a big collegial support group in a rural practice. Everybody knows everybody. We all support each other. We all have our strengths and weaknesses, and we try and support each of the doctors in our community by supporting their strengths. And that makes work in a rural northern BC town absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's the teamwork. I think you've mentioned that as a theme several times in the episode. So yeah, teamwork, it's great.
Yeah, that's wonderful to hear. And it's clear that you're in exactly the right place where you should be. So that's also wonderful. Okay, well, we've sadly reached the end of our interview now, and I can hear the closing music coming. So I'd like to extend a big thank you to you, Magda, for joining us today and talking about your QI work. And as with all our guests, an exclusive and highly coveted QualityCast North coffee mug will be winging its way to you very shortly. To you, the listener, if you'd like to know more about today's guest and episode, you can find that information with the show notes on our website. But until next time, thank you for joining us. I'm Cher Chewy.
I'm Deanna Danskin.
And you've been listening to QualityCast North. Today's episode was hosted and co-produced by Dr. Cher Chewy and Deanna Danskin, with technical support from Matt Walker. Original music by Daniel Chewy and artistic support by Reggie Goodine. QualityCast North is recorded on the traditional territory of the Clay Clayton May First Nation. If you enjoyed today's interview, check out our other episodes available on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you find your podcasts.